Making a recipe that calls for butter? Make it better with European butter from France. With a minimum of 82% butter fat, it's no wonder French butter is the number one choice of chefs the world over. Whether you're whipping up an omelet, sauteing vegetables, or spreading it on toast, the rich, cultured flavor of butter from France always elevates. Be sure to look for Made in France on the label. And for recipes, tips, and tricks, go to tasteeurope.com.
Well, and also long-form restaurant reviews, the people that are writing them, they don't talk about service because they don't know service. They don't know beverage. Mm-hmm. And there's also the taste factor. If you have bad taste, who's going to want to read what you're writing?
This is Taste. I'm your host, Matt Rodbard. Big Boy Los Angeles food podcasters have entered the studio. It was so great catching up with the dynamic duo of Jordan Okun and Max Shapiro, the voices behind the Air Jordan podcast and some of the LA food scene's spiciest takes. On this episode, we hear all about what is good, what is extremely bad, and what is like kind of mid in the Los Angeles dining scene. If you're interested in Los Angeles dining, you gotta tune in, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Jordan Okun and Max Shapiro, welcome to This Is Taste. Guys, what's up?
What's up?
How you doing?
Well, I'm good. I mean, Max, you're hungover. You're at Stella last night.
It's not like a full-blown hungover. I'm just maybe a touch slow.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. So you walk into our studio. We're here in LA. We're recording live or on tape. And you're both wearing all black, like doing it. Like, who died?
My dignity. No, I always wear all black. This is the uniform.
I love it.
It's very slimming. We need to do anything we can do. Okay. Yeah. Matt, you're wearing way too many colors. Okay.
No,
we're not on Ozempic yet.
Wait,
Max maybe, but no one else here is.
No, I eat way too much.
We're not on the Ozempi, so it's like the black clothes help.
Are they going to have Ozempic shakes at some point where we don't have to shoot up?
I hope so. Why are you scared of shooting up?
No, I love a good shot.
Right.
I mean, once in a while. But
you love a good shot?
Yeah, like a good shot.
No, but some people are...
Intravenous non-drugs. That's what I'm into.
Some people are some people are scared of the shot and won't do it, but I don't think it seems like a big deal.
I think, there's a lot of reasons why that shot is actually happening, and people are...
No, wait a minute.
...overcoming their
fears. You were at Stella last night.
Yeah.
Did you eat there?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. But don't you have a reservation on Friday?
I do.
So I got to back up and say, I love the hijack of the interview, Jordan. It's so good.
Sorry.
I'll control myself.
He doesn't know any other way.
It's expected. And I love your show. And I'll say this quick. I love the show. I think Air Jordan is a really essential show for LA. If you come to LA, you should listen to the show. I mean,
awesome.
It's really good. You guys do a great job.
Thank you.
And that's right here. But are you on the payroll at Stella?
I'm not on the payroll. I mean, I love so many of the people involved. I just want to support them and make sure that, food's coming out right, service is doing a good job, the bar's doing a good job. And if I'm not there as a guest, kind of giving them lots of feedback, I think it'll take a lot longer for them to get to where they want to be.
So when you say them, are you just like friends with them and you're just doing like a good citizen here?
Yeah, I mean, Rob Gentile has become one of my best friends. The chef de cuisine, Sarah Fiore, I'm really close with. Janet Zuccherini, I talk to all the time.
Okay.
I want to see them succeed.
Dude, it's your guys, and
I
love it. It's like it's part of restaurants. If you become friends with a chef, you want to support them.
Right.
All right, Jordan, starting with you, I just like the way you, on your show for years, have, you're catty. Like, you have opinions. You can be bitchy. But you don't pile on, which I like. You like have a little bit of restraint. You also talk a little shit about the New York media, which I kind of like, being a member of them. Let me ask you, what's the biggest story in LA food that no one's talking about?
Max is going to like this one.
Oh, give it to me.
Well, Travis Led has been absent for a while now. And we hear he's coming back. In a big way.
Yeah.
We hear he may be relaunching an old beloved restaurant of his. And, LA media puts out hottest openings or most important openings that are happening a couple of days ago, and it's just it's nowhere there. No one's talking about it.
Back up. What is he famous for our listeners that if we don't know who he is?
He started Jelena.
Exactly.
Chef from Jelena, right. Mountain.
Justa.
Jelena, New York, mm-hmm. is part of this, like, being away, I would imagine.
Reopening soon.
And, yep. Reopening, you know, soon. He was part of L.A. getting on the map as far as our being in the conversation nationally as, you know, a food destination. And he's been absent. And I feel like his absence, and Max could speak to this better than I can, but has been felt.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited for him to come back.
Yeah, good one. What about you? Do you have Max, do you have a story that is being slept on?
It's not necessarily a story. I agree with Jordan. You know, people aren't hip to the Travis Lett upcoming restaurants. It's going to be two.
Okay.
I think that people aren't talking about how there's an insane lack of hospitality professionals in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You can't find any good GMs anymore, sommeliers, servers, cooks. We know friends that are opening restaurants. They can't find anyone. Yeah. And, you know, even with Stella, it's been so hard. They don't even have a sommelier on the floor right now.
Really?
We're talking, this is a huge restaurant. They can't get anybody. Mm-hmm. The talent pool is just non-existent and no one's talking about it.
Yeah, I think New York struggles with that as well. I mean, we obviously have to figure out the economics of restaurants and get those guys paid to be on the floor, right?
But also a lot of these people have moved on to doing other things.
I see.
You know, a lot of the great wine professionals before, they're now like brand ambassadors and they work for big name vineyards or companies, and they no longer want to work in a restaurant.
Well, yeah, the hours are better.
Yeah, I get it. But
yeah, I get
what
it
about
too.
The young bucks coming up and cutting their teeth? Where are they at?
Jordan, or each of you, but start with Jordan. What's the one restaurant that you feel is just like hyper, hyper, hyper underrated?
You know, it does feel like, and I'm taking another page from Max, but that Dunsmore is somehow still underrated. I mean, there are reservations mm-hmm. available
You're right.
most nights. And yes, it is further away city-wise from where most people want to drive every night.
Dunsmore is like Arts District or downtown?
No, it's Glassell Park.
Oh, it's Glassell. Oh, interesting.
It's northeast Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's
but
not...
other restaurants out there are busy, and I just feel like people who I trust, the time I was there, people who I trust, there's so much good mm-hmm. talk coming out of there that it should be more of a thing.
Yeah. Max, what about you?
I'm going to have to give that to my guy, Shunji. He's getting snubbed left and right by Michelin, all the listicles, and he's a literal sushi master, and he's completely underrated and overlooked.
Jordan, backing up, you know, how did you fall into this role? Or maybe not fallen, that's actually a little pejorative. How did you establish this role as like a guy who has these opinions and started a podcast? And many, like in the industry, listen to your show. Many don't admit it, I'm sure. But I think like you're an influencer. But you worked in entertainment before. How did this like evolve?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm a writer and wrote a book about a kid in LA who went to a lot of restaurants, right? It was like a kid trying to make it in Hollywood. And mm-hmm. part of that is going to all the hot restaurants at the time. And after that, I was selling some television projects. And I was noticing that every single general meeting I was going into based off the book and the pilots, no one wanted to talk about really writing or what I was doing next. They just wanted to talk about the restaurants and the food and if I was going to the places I was writing about. Because all of the work that I do, I like to create LA as a character in a background and use our restaurants. So I was noticing that half the meetings were just these executives who I want to get work from wanting to just know, where should I go eat?
Mining you for all your Rolodex, your info.
Right. So then I started thinking, all right, well, these people obviously care a tremendous amount about food. I should start writing about food and talking more about food to get their attention, to get my voice into their heads more. And maybe they'll want to work with me on, you know, scripts. So I started writing.
Yeah.
And I was able to create a voice and a style of writing that I did not think existed in Los Angeles. It was a lot of first person. It was my own mandate. And that worked for a while. And
is this Substat? Not Substat.
No, I my first article was for Eater. I was the only person in like Dan Tana's 50th anniversary party, which was shut down. And I was always pitching publications, and they would never take my pitches. And I woke up the morning after, and I was like, Jesus, I was the only one there. So I pitched it out, and Eater was like, oh yeah, do it. I mean, especially if you have photos. So I was able to write in a way that I thought was fun and and different than everything else in food media at the time. And that was working for a while, and I was writing for almost everybody in LA. But eventually the editors kind of took over and their mandates took over, and I wasn't able to sound how I wanted to sound.
We kind of exited the bloggy blog era and entered like the algorithm era, where like service was super important and maybe voice-driven content writing was not as important.
Yeah, I just like, if I wrote for Eater LA, you have to sound like Eater LA. If you wrote for Time Out, you have to sound like Time Out or LA Magazine to try to do something out of the box creatively, everyone wasn't that interested in.
Interesting.
So I thought then the best way to get my voice out there was to get my voice out there.
Yeah,
you know, there were a couple of LA food podcasts at the time that had just ended. So no one was doing,
Shout out to Tall Tales, right? Jason Stewart.
It was the Stew.
Or the Stew,
it was
right?
Jason's
right.
other podcast, the Stew.
That was the one I listened to as well before. Yeah.
That had ended. And so I thought, oh, the best way to get my voice out there is literally to get my voice out there. And I kind of strategically brought in friends from Hollywood and just wanted to remain sounding different than all of food media.
And it really does. I mean, I love the inside baseball. It's definitely appreciated. I think that you aren't trying to like tell everyone for every episode where to dine. You're like doing your own like bits, which I think is cool. And are you really going to retire? You've been like threatening it for a while.
Well, look,
stop just smiling.
Just like MJ, right? Like MJ had a couple retirements, right?
And if we're Air Jordan,
the first retirement may be coming.
So, Max, I want to get to you.
Yeah.
You're a reality TV star. You're a Division One hooper, a true Jewish Division One baller. You're LA real estate royalty, it seems. So how do you fit into this conversation with Jordan? Because your guys are obviously really close. You're on the show a lot. But you also have your own unique take on restaurants that I find very cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the resident know-it-all with with some knowledge and experience to back it up. Since I was 10 years old, I've been obsessed with food and cooking and learning all things restaurant. And, you know, I've traveled the world to eat at the best restaurants in the world. I started an underground fine dining restaurant out of my home for 7+ years. You know, we did 16 courses, 11 beverage pairings, had an 11,000 person waiting list.
Wait, stop. Back up for a sec. So are you doing the cooking? Are you the
chef? Yeah. I was the chef. I was the florist. I was the reservationist. I was I was janitorial.
I mean, you posted an image of your fridge, and you had like 3-year-old Umeboshi, and I was like, guy knows fermentation.
Eight-year-old.
Sorry, strike that, Clayton.
But I told you that was a mistake.
Yeah, it was a mistake, but it worked out pretty well. So Max, you clearly love cooking at the highest level. I mean, you got some nice skills.
It's my creative outlet,
yeah.
Or at least it was my creative outlet. I stopped cooking regularly years ago. But, you know, I'm in a profession that has zero creativity, which is residential real estate. So this is the outlet.
Yeah. Does it help with your client service game to have like a really nice home kitchen? Do you bring over clients? Do you do some cooking for them?
No. I've noticed that wealthy people really don't give a shit about food, and they have horrible taste in food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the one restaurant that kind of illustrates this thesis that you're putting out in Los Angeles?
I mean, there's anything on Cannon Drive?
Yeah, I was just at Cipriani the other day.
Cipriani. They love Cipriani.
Yeah.
And it's like you're basically receiving food that's been plated 2 hours ago, and you order it, and 30 seconds later, it hits the table.
their heat lamp bill is like, you know, more than most restaurants,
pretty much.
Electricity bills.
Yeah.
What I mean, let's go there. I mean, why we're talking about the ultra rich. I mean, we talk about also like private clubs as well as part of the dining, but what are some other restaurants that the ultra rich are going to that maybe are kind of hot trash? Avra?
It's a Greek restaurant that's massive.
It was like a Torah portion. It sounded like Avra, a Greek restaurant.
It's like the Milos ripoff.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. You get to pick your fish off the display where they're on the ice, and then they get to completely overcook the fish for you.
Yeah, that's definitely like in New York. There's like a few places in Midtown by my office that are like that. Yeah, I got to avoid those places. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about the, you know, just schmoozing and being seen. And, you know, anyone that goes to like Catch.
Yeah,
like,
Catch is.
Get out of here.
What about Craig's? What's your take on that?
It's inedible food, but it's a scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Jordan, let me ask you about L.A., the rich people paradigm that we're getting into. What do you think about the ultra rich? Are there any spots that come to mind that you like frustrate you that are popular?
No, I mean, they don't. Look, it's only frustrating when like someone wants to go to Nobu Malibu and it's the most impossible reservation in L.A. and you have to jump through 1,000 hoops. But I don't mind these restaurants. And, you know, I grew up going to some of these restaurants, as did Max.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, our careers up to this point have brought us into these restaurants. And so there's a level of appreciation for them. Everything is not about food. Every restaurant experience is not about food. And so there is a level of appreciation and, I mean, strangely, sometimes feeling at home in these type of restaurants. Although I did not feel at home at Cipriani the other
night.
That
just opened, right? It's a pretty new opening. Yeah.
you can't feel at home there.
An import that LA needed, but no one else needed, I guess. I mean, certainly.
They're doing well.
There is a long list of New York restaurants I would have preferred to come here that are refusing to come here for whatever reason.
We can definitely get into that. I've talked to plenty. It's a tough one. I want to ask you, Jordan and then Max, it seems that, Jordan, you want Max to be a TikTok star. And I want to get your sense about these backseat reviews that seem to be quite popular. I feel these backseat reviews, they're weird. It's like this like combination of celebrity, is like a little bit of the algorithm gaming. There's like some PR freebies in there. But like for whatever reason, this is like the biggest thing in food media right now. We have to like call it as it is. So you want Max to be one of these guys.
Well, I want Max to do his version. I want to see an elevated, more articulate version of this. I don't want him sitting in his fucking car, you know, getting Shunji to go, right? I don't want that. What I want is for these people, and if Max did it, to just try to not be so derivative of each other, right? Because they're all as unfunny as the next. They are all visiting the same places. They're all eating the same food and rating the same food. And honestly, I watch it, right?
Yeah.
I would...
Well, kind of, like at like 20% battery life.
I mean, this...
It's like not really, you know...
This is the slop that is sloshing around in our phones, right?
Yeah.
And I was just hoping and thinking that Max, who is the most frustrated with these people, right? Because it is such easy content, right?
Yeah.
And it's like this dirty piece of candy that everyone accepts. Followings go up because of it, right? And then they become this authority or this supposed authority on things where most of these people are not educated about food, right? Now, by the way, I am not educated about food, but I am clearly coming at this from like
passion.
A love, but like also like comedy, right? Like,
sure.
I am trying to be entertaining and funny about things. And that's why I have him there. I mean, it's like we are the yin and the yang, and it's why it kind of works. You know, I am South Beverly Grill sushi and Diet Coke, and he's at Sun G with champagne. You know, it couldn't be more
great
different.
Foils. I think you're right about the entertainment value of these backseat, these TikTokers, and just like they're joyless. And I think I'll push back. I think like food education is a sliding scale. I think if you eat out enough, you pay for enough meals, you go to enough places, that's education. So I think you're pretty educated. I mean, you haven't gone to school for it, but whatever. I don't know what school is for a food writer, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think if someone came at it from a different angle, right?
And yeah.
And what I try to do creatively, which is when I write or when I'm doing a podcast, I want to sound different than everyone else doing it, right? And try to go a creative way and a fresh way. And I think he could deliver a fresh way to these on-camera reviews from someone who is a bit of an authority.
So we set it up, Max, and definitely if you hit Max's Instagram, really good. Like really, really thoughtful. I think there's like entertainment value there per Jordan's note. And I think that there is a need for like real paying for your meals content. So are you up for the challenge? Are you going to do it?
I don't think I have the time. Someone needs to sponsor me. I mean, it's like
sponsor.
If I'm going to spend all that time doing this, I got to get paid because I'm already spending enough time.
But you're already doing it.
But I'm not on camera.
You got to get
the
$300 live. You got to get the like camera. You got to get the guy to edit it.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. I don't know.
Unfortunately, we are in a period where the written word is less engaging than these videos, and
I'm old school.
He's thoughtfully writing out reviews, but it's not leading to a following that he's able to truly.
No.
Let's also get real. Like when Jordan says you're writing, you're literally writing Instagram captions. So, I mean, I think that's like, I agree with you, Jordan, fully. Like, people are not reading as much. We need to get into podcasts and more visual mediums. But, I mean, think about like long form restaurant reviews. Who's reading those? I mean, we have Bill Addison in later. I'm going to talk to him about that. I feel like it's challenging right now to get people to care.
Well, I think the challenge with these are food authorities, as Jordan said, you know, everyone eats and everyone has an opinion, but there's no accounting for taste.
No, no.
And there's no education. I mean, people eat all the time. They don't understand what they're eating. They don't understand how what they're eating got in front of them. They don't know the inner workings. And that's what bothers me about these people. And also long form restaurant reviews, the people that are writing them, they don't know. They don't talk about service because they don't know service. They don't know beverage. Mm-hmm. And there's also the taste factor.
Yeah.
If you have bad taste, who's going to want to read what you're writing?
Yeah. I mean, great point. I think we align with certain critics because have visited the restaurants they're reviewing. And I'm like, I'm down with Pete Wells. Like, I personally align with his taste. Like, I feel like I'm down with him.
Okay.
But I feel like there's other critics I'm not, and I just don't go to those restaurants.
Right. I mean, and you can tell they don't criticize anymore, other than Pete, who will trash a place. But most of them they don't criticize anymore.
Yeah.
They'll take a place that has a lot wrong with it, and they'll sugarcoat it, and somehow it ends up being something that they're recommending you go to.
Yeah.
When you shouldn't.
It's tricky.
And God forbid you critique the critics, you know, because they can't handle that.
Yeah.
And that's part of the pushback that we've gotten.
Yeah.
Which is like, people are putting themselves out there. They're criticizing these restaurants, right? They're possibly hurting business or helping business, but like, they're not down to be reviewed. And we take joy in reviewing the reviewers.
I take a lot of joy.
No, you guys do talk about a little of the inside food media baseball, which I think you just like subscribe and check it out. Let me ask you, Max, working in residential real estate, you see some spots. What is the sickest home kitchen you've seen?
There was a house that I showed to a client probably like 7 years ago on a street called Oak Pass, which is in Beverly Hills Post Office, up in the hills of Beverly Hills.
Shout out West Home.
Shout out West Home. Yeah, West Home House. This kitchen had a wood-burning grill, a wood-burning oven, the whole Gaggenau modular suite of appliances. You had deep fryers, planchas, induction, wok burner, regular gas burners, you know, multiple warming drawers, refrigerator drawers. It was totally decked out. I have no idea how they got the wood-burning grill and oven permitted for indoors. But this thing was sick. And I'm sure the person that bought it has never used it.
Really? Why so? Is it just because?
It was a $30 million house.
Yeah.
People with $30 million, they usually don't give a shit about cooking.
That's just sad.
Well, but like, their chefs were probably using it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, maybe they have a chef. Staff. I don't know. Yeah.
What was the colorways? What were we looking at here?
It was all black marble with, you know, white veining and
veining.
Yeah, the veins in the marble. Veiny. You like that?
A veiny kitchen.
Yeah, it's a very veiny. Yeah, it was, and there were, you know, just great accents to everything in it, and it was kind of a timeless look.
What's the one item you can add to a home kitchen just to like up the value of your house, or at least up the pleasure of your home cooking experience from your real estate point of view?
Value, probably nothing.
Yeah.
What you have in your kitchen really isn't going to drive value. If you're someone who cooks, I think that more refrigeration, I think warming drawers, yeah, so you can warm your plates, keep sauces warm, things like that. But
air fryer?
No. Air fryer?
Yeah.
Get out of
George
here.
Foreman. I mean a low boy refrigerator in a kitchen, if you can sneak that in, that's sick. Like, I mean, that's like the best thing to have.
Low boys, you can't really clad.
Yeah.
But you, Sub Zero and other companies, Thermador, they make refrigerator drawers.
Oh, that's
so that would
saying.
Be akin to a low boy.
I see. So low boys just are not, that's not the right term. I get it.
But a low boy, I mean, you're talking restaurants.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking in the same vein. Okay, like name names, like celebrities who have great kitchens. Just you, Benin.
Jimmy Kimmel, I know, has a great kitchen.
Yeah.
And a great setup. Other than that, people just, I mean, they just have normal kitchens.
Yeah.
I know he customized his kitchen to have a lot of things.
For his own, for his staff. He cooks.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
My God, what's he making?
And his staff.
What's he making?
I don't know what he's making.
Did he make you something when you were?
No, I've heard.
You've heard? Oh, this I've is heard. More word on the street. This isn't firsthand. Okay.
I've seen some photos and I've heard.
All right. So, Jordan, you worked in film development, and I want to ask you, what's catering like, you know, on sets? I've talked to, like, Giddy Glick and Phil Rosenthal and others. I wonder if you've had experiences in writers' rooms where there's been good food.
So, I worked for this Trumpian motherfucker who would bring in KFC for bankers and would fight employees for his, you know, chocolate-covered Dove bars in the freezer. I did not have the foodie, you know, everybody loves Raymond writing room experience. According to people I've spoken to, no one did it like Phil.
Yeah.
So I did not have that. I mean, we have friends who are writers, and, you know, look, takeout is takeout. Like, it's only going to be so good. So, yeah, they'll get a tray of chivichangas from Sonora Town, right? But, like, how good could the chivis be after an hour?
You can't do takeout Mexican. I'm sorry.
And everyone's not reheating, you know, when they get it. So it's just like, takeout's takeout. People know the good takeout to get, but how good could it be?
Both of you, best either wrap party or premiere party food-wise for a project, either a TV show, a film, or director's, like, personal stash.
My brain's, the wheels are spinning.
Well, speaking
right
of Jimmy
now.
Kimmel, a few years ago, he threw an after party after the Oscars. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, he had his whole crew there. I mean, he had APL doing sliders, prime rib sliders. He had Chris doing pizza. He had, Mark out from Philly doing pasta for everyone.
Wow.
So it was
Mark
something.
Mark of the Vetri.
It was someone.
He's a flyout guy.
It was something. And Chris, Chris wasn't out here yet. He was still in Phoenix. So, yeah. And Adam wasn't really out here, 4 years ago or five years ago. It was right before COVID. That was probably the best. I don't think he's doing that party anymore, though.
Yeah. He did a good job with the Oscars. What about you, Max? Any memorable rap parties?
No, I've not been to that party. I've never been to a rap party or anything where food was even remotely thought of in a positive way.
Yeah, I mean, Chris and Coco for The Bear, they did like some screenings of the first two episodes before it was out, before it dropped, before season one. Before it was this monster.
Yeah.
And Courtney was doing, you know, she was doing Chicago Dogs
ices. I know Coco's doing the ices.
And cool. She was doing the Coco to Go-Go's.
Yeah, I love that.
Ices. And
yeah.
That was a good one.
I wasn't at that either.
Speaking of the Bear, it's a good segue. It's funny. I was at the James Beard Awards like 2 months before the Bear came out. And Jeremy Allen White's in the green room, like with all the journalists at the show, because he had presented. Literally zero people talked to the guy. He was just like sitting in the corner. And it just made me think about where we are now in the show. And like, and especially LA, the show is based in Chicago, obviously, but it's an LA creation because a lot of people who work on the show live here. Let me ask you, first off, Jordan, what has this show meant for Hollywood in terms of development, in terms of interest in the food world? You're very early and plugged. Is your phone ringing a little bit more?
No, look, I mean, there was so clearly a void in the scripted world for the right food show, for the right restaurant show. And all previous attempts were embarrassing failures, yeah. Right? So there was so clearly a void and someone needed to fill it. And I think Chris did beautifully and is doing it beautifully. I don't know if it's leading to more interest in it. You know, it's before Entourage, there was not a Hollywood show that really worked. And, you know, no matter what you think about Entourage, it was a massive success. And, you know, there hasn't really been the quintessential Hollywood show after that. You know, I know Seth Rogen's now about to do one for Apple. So we'll see how that is. But I don't know. I hope it leads to more scripted food shows. But it's tough, man. People, just like executives shy away from shows about Hollywood, I feel like they shy away from shows about the restaurant industry because it is so difficult to nail.
You really think so? I mean, I feel like it's such a rich text. I mean, we could go into like 1970s LA and like the creation of California cuisine. We could go into like culinary school world. I feel that's a whole text. I feel like it needs imagination, which Hollywood lacks completely most of the time.
Yeah, I always thought it'd be cool to do like the 80s OG Spago show.
That was just coming to my mind. That would be amazing. Every celebrity in the world like at the that
Deuce,
time rolling
you know,
in.
Like the David Simon Deuce version of it or like a Terrence Winter.
Put Michael McCarty in that thing. I mean, it would be
version
great.
Of it.
Yeah. Why not?
I couldn't write that show.
Why not?
I don't have interest in retro LA. I have a lot of interest in modern day LA. And, you know, I've been running around with a scripted show about the LA food world for a long time. And I hope I could sell one day. Just in that, I would love LA to have the shine that Chicago now has.
Yeah.
I would love LA to have the shine that, you know, Billions was able to do for the New York restaurant scene, that Sex and the City was able to do for the New York scene. I would really love LA to get the spotlight. And
what's the problem with these executives? It's just like sitting here for the taking. I mean, it could be like 3/4 speed of the Bear and be very successful.
Yeah, well, it just needs a new way in, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, right.
Like
on.
There should not be. I never wanted to write and you know the show that I have written is not inside a restaurant. You know, I think Chris has done that so well that no one else needs to do that, and they'll keep exploring that. But there are so many other angles to explore. So I hope it leads to more development. It should lead to more development.
What do you think, Max, about the Bear? How has the show affected, you know, the way people talk about food? Has it elevated the way that restaurant culture is part of conversation, or is it on the flip side kind of annoying that people are like saying the word corner and drinking out of delis? And
we don't need to hear Yes Chef ever again.
Or yes.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like I need to go into my script and take Yes Chef or anyone calling anyone referring to anyone as a chef out because
Control F that word. Yeah, do that shit.
Because, you know, that is now part of the Bear's lexicon. And even though it is a part of the food industry lexicon in general, it's just like it just feels so much of that, but
that's a product of the Bear. But what I appreciate is, and I always talk about this, that I'm huge on people being more educated about this restaurant industry. And because you have Chris, who's been so peripherally involved because of Courtney involved in Maddie Matheson, you're actually seeing what happens in restaurants instead of like some kind of, gilded vision of a restaurant where you bring in a consultant like Dominique Crenn for the menu, where they're using a fake flame in a wood-burning grill and all these stupid things. This is real, and it helps people understand, you know, the verbiage within a restaurant and the systems. And yes, if you know, people are drinking out of delis now and saying yes, chef corner. It doesn't really bother me.
No.
But you know, subconsciously, people are absorbing this information and learning more.
Each of you, give me a celebrity that you interact with, because you do interact. Who knows their shit about food that we might be surprised? Jordan, you first.
Oh, God. I don't know a single celebrity who knows anything about food, really. I just had lunch with a celebrity who I'm not friends with.
I won't say.
He's like somewhat involved in the food world and a nice enough guy on first meeting, but he had such a wild take on steak in Los Angeles.
Oh, let's go. Come on, let's unpack this.
Well, he thinks Musso and Frank's is the best steak in Los Angeles, and it's arguably the worst steak in Los Angeles.
That's objective.
That's not a subjective opinion, right? And so, like,
they use select beef.
I don't know.
Select is like below choice.
I didn't even know if it was like a hot take or something. But celebrities who love food and are really involved in the food world seem to love a hot take. And the point is, we all love food, right? And we all have our subjective opinions about everything, but it's hard to tell who knows what because everyone is quick to do a hot take,
flame throwing and doing that. I mean, my theory is this, that I think a lot of people in the industry on the acting side have a background in food because it's obviously catering and it's a big part of you're on working in theater or you're working in film, and like many of these folks maybe don't want to think about food again because they worked in it, you know, for like 10 years, 5 years, et cetera. I mean, Io Adebiri used to work at ABCV, and we talked about her. Like, I remember she was amazing, like really funny, cool person working the booth at ABCV back like in 2017, 2016. And like, I just feel like, I don't know if she wants to talk about food. I'm not putting words into her mouth, but like, I feel like maybe a celebrity doesn't want to if they've had that background in the industry.
She has to now because she's on a food show.
Well, now she's part of it, and that adds to her role. That's why she's so great at it, because she worked at restaurants and she's got a great background. But like, I just don't, maybe it's just like not an interest for celebrities.
What about Questlove?
What about him?
I feel like he's pretty involved. He has sometimes he has questionable taste, but I think he's very involved in
food.
But
that's my point. It's like everyone has questionable taste. I have the most questionable taste. Yeah, right. An expert like the great Max Shapiro, you could question his taste, even though he thinks everything is objective.
If you question my taste, then, I mean, you're wrong.
There you go. So it's just like everyone should be questioned, right? Because it is such a personal, subjective thing. And it's fun to give a hot take, and it's fun to disagree
with it. Yeah, and really, I think the listener understands and maybe smiling at this point, at this conversation, because we're, like, talking about hot takes and food, and there's nothing better than debating these lists, right?
I mean, it's just
I'd love to debate them.
It's just part of the dialogue, you know? It's just what it is.
On This Is Taste, we asked guests about their discerning taste. So to close this interview, here's a little rapid-fire Fast and Furious taste check. Are you guys ready?
Ready.
Yes.
All right, we'll start with you, Jordan. The best fruit.
Oh, God. I don't even eat the best fruit, and no one does really, but I think it's a lemon.
What about you, Max?
I'll say pineapple.
Yeah, when it hits.
It's versatile. I think it's a balanced fruit.
Yeah, but you can't put
sweet,
it in a Diet Coke. You're not gonna make a piccata with it.
Pineapple and Diet Coke, I'd be down.
All right, I'll try.
It doesn't have to apply to savory. Pineapple piccata.
Did you ever have the flavor, the Rosalia flavored Coke from two summers ago?
I did not.
That was.
Did they make a diet version? I only drink Diet Coke.
There was a zero version, and it was.
What?
I'll mess with zero.
It was great.
Rosalia, like the singer?
Yeah, she had a light blue, powder blue can, and it had like pineapple coconut in it. It was good.
Wow.
It was good. The worst vegetable.
Frisée, that's easy. We discussed this recently. Frisée, no dressing, no 6-minute egg, no fried pork, save frisée.
Acorn squash.
Oh, yeah, roasted, pureed.
Just, it is mealy, it is virtually flavorless.
Yeah.
It's awful.
It has, like, sugar where you don't want sugar.
It's wrong. Everything's wrong about it.
The best dessert.
The best dessert... I think, is Nancy Silverton's Copetta Sunday at Pizzeria Mozza. Mm-hmm. But a close second is a Mrs. Fields cookie cake. Yeah, and it has to have frosting on it, okay? There are people who are eating this Mrs. Fields cookie cake without frosting.
Shocking.
And they are
Neanderthals.
Right, I mean, I don't understand a cookie cake without frosting.
You would not believe how popular they are, that some people cannot stomach that frosting.
I mean, are you talking about...
If you're stomaching the frosting, if you're stomaching... The cookie cake, how could you not stomach the frosting?
I mean, are you talking about a border frosting? Or are we talking about like full tableaus, like with like?
I want it all. I'll write huge messages just to get the extra frosting and the lining, everything.
Draped.
Your favorite, Max, your favorite dessert?
It's the chocolate souffle from Asador Etchebari.
Good name drop there. I respect it. Is that so? That's before the steak course?
It's far after.
Okay, I thought the Etchebari did the steak at the end.
They do it at the end, but the dessert comes after, obviously. Okay. Come on.
That's my confusion, and having never been there, I love the Flex. It's a great restaurant, I've heard. But so they do the steak course as the final savory, and then they actually go to a proper dessert.
And then they go into dessert.
All right, I always envisioned it as like steak after dessert, which seemed weird. But
that would be very weird.
All right, let's talk about the dessert then. What's good about it?
So he doesn't cook on anything other than open fire.
Yeah.
So basically, he puts this souffle, which is a mixture of white chocolate, dark chocolate, and who knows what other magic is in there. It's in a ring mold, and he cooks it in the fire. Then they bring it to your table, and they lift the ring mold off of the plate, and it kind of just like collapses.
Yeah.
And it's just so delicious. And it's about the product and the way he's cooking it. It's also time and place, and
of course, it sounds like Massimo. It sounds like a Massimo recipe.
Oh, when you start, Matt.
Massimo,
I mean,
in his life, couldn't even attempt to make the worst dish that Bitor has ever made at Asador Etchebari. What is it going to do? Make 14 purees and throw them on a plate?
Oh, the Massimo heat is real in this room. It's getting hot in here.
Snake oil salesman.
I mean, let's keep going.
Really?
I mean, we could.
You want it?
I know some folks who've been to Austria Francescana and have done the 6 hours and have left feeling the grift.
Yeah, it's pound for pound the worst restaurant I've ever been to in my life.
But I do feel if their air conditioning was better, you would have liked it a little more.
It would have still been
It was warm
the
in
worst.
Modena that morning? That day.
No, it was like 46 degrees outside, but they kept it like a nice 84 on the interior. With the lights in your LED lights at 100% in your eyes.
I've not been there. I've been in the door and looked in. But like, let me ask you, my take about Austria Francescana is like the crowd is kind of cringe. The people you're dining with.
The crowd was cringe. The service was cringe. But the most cringe was the food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why we like you, Max. Appreciate the service.
You like me or you hate me. It's either one.
Well, you call it as it is. I appreciate it. It's a take. I mean, I feel like your opinion is not in the minority. Just saying. Your favorite American fast food chain, Jordan?
Taco Bell.
I knew you were going to say that.
Had to be Taco Bell.
I knew you were going to say that. I'll go In-N-Out. I don't really eat fast food.
Your favorite L.A. restaurant right now?
Favorite L.A. restaurant is Safi's right now.
Yeah. Why is it good?
You know, it's the food. Ori creates a space and a environment and the food that I want to eat. He's figured out what LA certainly wants to eat. It's hard to beat a wood-fired shawarma.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat his laffa and challah. It's hard to beat sitting in that room, you know, and amongst friends and you know, experiencing what Max would say maybe a touch overseasoned.
Not overseasoned. Too many spices.
Too many spices.
Different. And it's a very different point, but too much going on. That's Max's take, though. Max is on a roll right now.
Yeah.
You're on a
Kaiser. He likes Safi's.
I like Safi's. Ori works his ass off. He's one of the hardest working chefs that exists.
I love him.
And he's the golden boy, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, look, wood-fired meats, perfect hummus.
Yeah.
What else do you want?
No, I love the restaurants. I think they're all great. Ori and Genevieve, big shouts. I love those guys.
Lead by example, chef, not, someone that's just sitting at the pass expoing.
Max, your favorite restaurant right now?
Casual favorite restaurant, 16 years running, Jelena.
Yeah.
And I would say upscale, I'll give it to Cato.
Oh, yeah. Second time that's happened in this. We've had two interviews today and two have said Cato.
Oh, amazing.
So, yeah, I've heard their NA program is quite good, too.
Austin is incredible for your A needs and NA needs.
Yeah, I've heard. Yeah, Austin's listening to the show, so shout out to Austin. You're going to be on the show at some point. We got to get you on. Next one, your favorite non-LA California restaurant right now, Jordan?
Non-LA California. We got to give it to Addison.
Yeah. Do you make it down? Is that like a day trip? Or do you like stay in San Diego?
No, you want to overnight it.
You want to
even with the even with the 6 p.m. reservation, which we are partial to. You don't want to drive back to L.A. after a meal like that. You want to enjoy yourself. You want to stay there, have an after drink, stay at the hotel, enjoy the room, and enjoy how stuffed you are.
Yeah.
Enjoy the chocolate covered Oreos at the hotel on the bed after.
I love like the pillow Oreo. I've had one before.
I had not, but the hotel there does them, and quite a treat.
What
nice
about you,
treat.
Max?
I would say Addison. It's one of my favorite restaurants in the world, actually. But because Jordan said Addison, I'll go Harbor House Inn in Elk.
Okay.
Yeah, Mendocino County.
Yeah, Mendocino.
Honorary mention to La Taqueria, San Francisco.
A few more. Your favorite cookbook of all time, Jordan.
Oh, God, I don't read cookbooks. I don't use cookbooks.
Welcome to the cookbook
channel. I find I would only disrespect the recipes, the food. If I would buy the Bevel cookbook. Yeah. But I would be disrespecting the neck, and we must respect the neck, not disrespect the neck.
Protect the neck.
The lamb neck and the hummus. So, I am not an at-home chef.
Fair enough.
At all. Don't use them.
You know your limitations. What about you, Max?
I'm going to sound like a broken record. The Asador Etchebarri cookbook.
Yeah.
Just because if you're someone that's been to that restaurant, you want that book, and you realize how simple the cooking is.
Yeah.
And then honorary mention, again, broken record over here, the Jelena cookbook, because it's good for people that don't really cook that often.
Yeah.
It's just easy to follow, and it's accessible ingredients and processes that you can follow.
I haven't picked up that book in a minute, but is there something that comes to mind recipe-wise that you go to from the Jelena cookbook or an idea?
I just think there are so many sauces that you can just apply to any vegetable or protein, and it makes it easy to kind of mix and match.
Cool. Jordan, a cuisine you would like to learn more about?
Probably Israeli.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't want to cook it. But understanding what I'm loving, I guess, could be enlightening.
It would be.
Would it be enlightening?
Yeah.
Of course it would
be. Okay, what's a good... You're a cookbook guy. What's a good Israeli cookbook?
I love Av's, Jerusalem, Yoda Matalangi's book from about 12 years ago.
Okay, now I have to figure out how to spell that. And
it's a G-H-I at the end.
Okay. I'll check that out.
It's a good one. What about you, Max?
I would probably want to learn a little more about Taiwanese food. I think a lot of people kind of just match it with Chinese cooking, but you know, it's an island. They have their own style, and I would like to know more about it.
Have you been?
No.
Yeah. Gotta get there.
Yeah.
Do you travel a lot for food?
I travel a lot for food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like you make your way around.
I do.
Yeah. What's on your like Delta app? Where are you going?
So in May, I'm going to Mexico City.
Cool.
And then in September, I'm going back to Tokyo and Kyoto.
Oh, right. Is it for vacation or what are you doing?
It's just to eat.
Yeah.
It's vacation.
Are there reservations already booked?
Yeah. I got Sugita and Saito done. And then for Mexico City, I'm revisiting Pujol, which I did not like when I went 9 years ago.
Yeah.
Quintonil, Maximo Bistro, Rosetta.
Yeah. World's 50 best shit happening here. I like it.
Oh, I mean, you know, if they need someone that knows anything about food and restaurants, they can reach out to me because we're on This Is Taste and and they lack it.
Yeah, I agree. The next call. I think that the World's 50 best definitely needs a rethink, and you'd be a great member of leadership there. Yeah, I agree. You're perfect for it.
I'd knock a lot of people off that totem pole.
I think you're saying something, and I feel like you're the ideal candidate for any judging, be it Beards or or World's 50, which probably should go away, to be honest, is you pay and you respect it and you like it. Jordan, you as well.
Yeah, Jordan, you want to go to some of the best restaurants in the world?
No, I just had some lovely meals in Cabo San Lucas.
Yeah,
oh, really? Is that family vacay?
Not at all.
Is that family vacay?
Yeah, no. I honestly haven't traveled enough, man. I would love to go to Israel.
Yeah.
I need to get back and eat properly in Spain, eat properly in Paris, eat properly in Italy. I just have not traveled outside of the U.S. much.
All good.
Yeah.
Plenty of time. Last one, your favorite sandwich.
Favorite sandwich. If it's not the Central Grocery Muffaletta, it's probably the only thing I do know how to assemble cooking wise, and that would be my annual Yom Kippur break faster sandwich, which is usually a bagel, scallion cream cheese, sliced black olive, tomato, onion, and a slice of Francioke and my mother's cheesy egg souffle.
In the sandwich,
in a bagel sandwich. Last year, I did put that on Ori's Everything Challah, and it...
Oh.
I may be doing that forever now.
I like it. Break faster is funny. Max, your favorite sandwich?
You know what? I'm going to give this love to Dom DiBartolomeo at the Cheese Store of Beverly Hills. The Zucca sandwich, add mortadella.
You are the third person who's mentioned the Cheese Store to me in the past 6 months. Mm. This place, I got to go. I've never been.
Well, I mean, Dom is an incredible guy.
A beautiful man, beautiful sandwiches.
Beautiful sandwiches.
That's right. Not a beautiful head of hair.
Jordan Okun and Max Shapiro, thank you so much for joining This Is Taste.
Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
This Is Taste is hosted by Eliza Abarbanel and me, Matt Rodbard. The show is produced by Shalia Harris and Pat Stango and edited by Clayton Gumbert. Theme music by Steve Rydell. Visit Taste online at tastecooking.com and make sure to subscribe to our newsletter for updates on all cool things that are happening.